Welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Lumen. On this show, we talk to farmers and ranchers who aren't afraid to think for themselves and do things a little bit differently. We hope these guests will challenge you to look at your farms and ranches in a new way and result in a more profitable and enjoyable business for you and your family. Hey folks, thanks so much for listening. Welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I am really excited for today's episode. It's with Dallas Mountain. We'll tell you a little bit more about what the conversation is going to hold here in just a moment. But first, I wanted to say thank you to my sponsor, Barn to Door. Barn to Door is an all-in-one solution for farmers who are selling direct to consumer. My wife and I, we've actually been using them now for, I want to say, close to 4 years. It'll be here in March. And they've made it so easy for us to manage all of our direct sales, both online and in person. They've helped us to increase our sales for our farm business. And if that's something that you're looking to do, improve your direct marketing business, I would really recommend you check out Barn to Door. They've got best-in-class training and support and a phenomenal program. You can go to www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. That's where you can learn a little bit more about the success we've had using them. And if you choose to sign up, you'll get access to a free academy session that's a $99 value. Again, the website is www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. But back to introduce the episode that we're going to have today. It was a couple weeks ago now I released my conversation with Trevor Burian, and we recorded that conversation a couple weeks prior to that. And that conversation was largely about Trevor's switch from using from cow-calf to a custom grazing cattle production model. And it was like the day after we recorded that interview that Dallas Mount shared in one of his Profit Tips article, an article titled something along the lines of "Fix the Business Before You Sell the Cows" or something like that. And it's like this article was written directly to address the conversation that Trevor and I had just had, where we talked about switching from cows to cattle. And so I asked Dallas to join me here today for a conversation about how we can fix the cow-calf business, how we can make the cow-calf business more profitable so we don't have to look at switching other enterprises. And it's a pretty phenomenal conversation that we have. So with that, thanks so much, Dallas, for joining me, and welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Always fun to be on. And just, I want to take just a second and thank you for the work you do in producing and recording this. You guys are, you and the other podcasters are making some wonderful content, and it's making an impact out there. And I get to see it firsthand.
Well, thank you. I think it's funny because you kind of started it all, didn't you? If I'm not mistaken, you encouraged Clay to start the first podcast. And I don't think if Clay hadn't started that Brian or myself or a lot of people ever probably would have. So props to you for starting.
It's fun to have a role in that. But Clay gives me more credit than I'm due. I think we were just talking together and I just made a suggestion and he did all the work. So
yeah. No. Well, he definitely took the arrows, I guess you could say, as like the pioneer and figured it all out for the rest of us. So I appreciate the role you did play. That's fun, but I appreciate the compliment too. It's a lot of fun to be able to do this. And I was just looking back, and I think you were the 10th episode that I did, one of those first few that I recorded. So I apologize. Back then I had no clue what I was doing, and one might argue that I still don't. So hopefully this goes a little bit better. But it was funny, I was looking through the conversations, and a lot of them were in that 30 to 45 minute range, and I was struggling to get that. And now I can't seem to keep a conversation under an hour and a half. So I'm enjoying it and getting a little more comfortable with it now. But I'm looking forward to this conversation. Like I mentioned, that article, it was like you had written it just for me. And I love cows. I'm a cow guy myself, so I was happy to see there's some hope for us yet. And I thought I'd bring you on, the expert who's talked to countless cow-calf guys and helped them turn their business around. But I guess the first kind of question I'll start off with you there is, you kind of highlighted it well in the article, there is the importance of figuring out what the individual producer's goal is before just making a jump into one enterprise or making a decision. And maybe talk a little bit about what your guys' process is, or the importance of helping a producer establish their operation goals, mission, and vision. For their businesses.
Happy to do that. It's a concern of mine that ranching for profit develops a reputation for like having a recipe that people that come to the school follow, right? And they say, oh, I went to ranching for profit and I quit making hay. I went to ranching for profit and I sold my cows and I'm custom grazing. I went to ranching for profit and we're just going to run yearlings, right? And those kind of things always concern me because there's not a recipe to running a profitable ranch, right? Mm-hmm. It's not as simple as doing you do A, B, and C, and D, and all your problems are solved, and your dog likes you again, right? It doesn't doesn't quite work like that. Sure. So, and also, you know, it's my job, it's our job as ranching for profit to help that individual build the business they want to build, right? Yeah. Not for us to tell them, well, this is the business you should have, right? Mm-hmm. Because everybody has different goals. They have different dreams. Like if I asked somebody, so you asked the question, how do we help people do that? So yeah. Really we just ask them questions and we keep asking them questions and try to peel back the layers of the onion to really see what's under it. And one of those questions we ask is, in your perfect world, 3 years from now, what do you want this business to be? Mm-hmm. And we keep asking that again and again, and we ask the different owners of the business, and then when they answer, well, we say, well, tell me more about that. Tell me more about that, right? So we kind of start getting down below those layers. So if we're asking someone those questions, and their answer to it is, you know, I want to ranch with my family and we want to have healthy land and we want to have these thriving ecosystems and we want to have a cow herd that has the reputation of being like the genetic base for low input ranchers or something like that, right? If that's the core answer to what they're doing, it involves those breeding animals and maybe genetic selection and reputation around that, right? Mm-hmm. And developing that. Well, if they sold their cows, that would be me taking, or if that was the suggestion that I made as a consultant, that would be me taking them 180 degrees from where they want to be. Yeah. Right. So it's really important. I mean, we have a lot of people that sit there in the school and they sit down and they do their numbers, they do their gross margins on their cows, and they get to that bottom line number. Now, the first time we get a number, I don't believe it, right? The first time you scratch your gross margins out, I'm like, okay, there's a huge error in here. So before we start making any decisions, let's make sure the numbers are right. But once we get them and we've done them like, you know, a couple times and somebody else has looked over and okay, we're pretty sure we don't have any holes in here. If they've got a really bad gross margin or even a negative gross margin, right? A temptation is often to go, well, just stuff it. Let's go do something else, right? And that's where I want to just say, okay, now hold on a second, you know, before we just say, let's stuff it, let's go do something else. We need to say, what's the direction we need to go, right? What's the goal here? Mm-hmm. Let's identify the end before we start mapping the course to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you see, do a lot of people have cow-calf as part of that? Or do you see a lot of people that maybe think cow-calf is a part of that, but they when you ask those questions, they stop at, I want to manage grass. I want to be a rancher, build soil, but it never actually gets into cow genetics. I mean, what are you seeing when you have those conversations?
Yes, that's a pretty insightful question. So there's a little bit of both. There are the people who they think cow-calf is the path to get them to where they want to go. Mm-hmm. And they think cow-calf is pretty important to it. But when you actually start peeling back that onion, you realize, wait a minute, I can meet all the objectives that mm-hmm. are the reasons why I want to ranch and why I want to do this without cow-calf.
Yeah.
Right. And if that's the case, to me, that's a lot easier path to chart, right? Because then it opens the door really wide to, okay, here's all the enterprises we could lay on this place to do that.
Yeah.
If it's going to be specific enough to say we have to have breeding animals and they have to be ours, that's a much more difficult thing because now we've narrowed our opportunities, you know, down to a much narrower path than they could be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I just think it was at the Ranching for Profit school I went to. I still laugh about this. There is an individual or a couple there, and it was in the evening when you can work with the instructors to kind of go through some enterprises and stuff like that. And the person said, okay, we should go through sheep and, you know, show me the sheep and stuff like that. And he said, no, I don't want to have sheep. So let's do this conservative. And I think it was Toby that was helping him through the numbers. And said, all right, so you can expect a 1.5, and I don't know the number, is a 1.5% lamb crop. He's like, all right, we're doing 1.1. And then every number he went through and made it even more conservative, and that gross margin it still blew his cattle out of the water and stuff. And so it was just hilarious. But it like when you open up the option, like you said, it's easier because you can look at things that maybe you didn't consider, like sheep. He didn't want sheep, but when he opened it up to being an option, he realized how much more potential there could be in his business. That being said, I'm sure I've met with cow-calf producers who have made some changes in their cow-calf business and found incredible profits within that enterprise too. It's not an impossible enterprise to find profit in, if I understand correctly.
Right, right. You might have heard me say, and some of the listeners might have heard me say, that if I look at all the enterprises that we work with, like across the spectrum, cow-calf is generally one of the least profitable things you can do, right? So I've been known to say that, and I stand by that. On averages, cow-calf is among the least profitable things you can do with cattle and grass to create profit. However, some of the cow-calf people are among the most profitable.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's a really interesting.
On average.
Yeah.
But some of the cow-calf people who are doing it well are just knocking it out of the park. I mean, their numbers are amazing. And so maybe that will bring us to the discussion of, so what are some of those things, right, that cow-calf people are doing that are really making it work?
Well, that's exactly where I want to go with it. But that's just interesting because, if you look at an average of anything, that doesn't really tell you a story of, what there's so many. It's such a diverse enterprise to every, I mean, it's such a diverse, landscapes affect it so much and everything. I mean, where you're at, what you're doing, how you operate that business to look at an average and say that that's how I will be is probably, it's not a fair representation of the potential of the enterprise at all. So cool. Yeah. So no, that makes a lot of sense. Let's go into it. I mean, you've worked with however many folks. I don't know if you want to go at this from like a, what are the best operators seeing, or what are the best, maybe as a direction, just to kind of get people, seeing of where they could be, and then we can dive into actually what they're doing. But I guess, what kind of potential do you see some of the top operators doing as far as profitability?
Yeah. So when I look at profitability of cow-calf, what I'm talking about is gross margin per cow or gross margin per standard animal unit, right? We can talk about it as either way. And if listeners aren't familiar with that language, go back and listen to the podcast you just did with Trevor. I thought you guys did a great job kind of breaking that out. If you listen to a lot of the industry speak, they put metrics on profitability around things like weaning weight and price received and, gross income numbers. And what we find is gross numbers and productivity don't have much to do at all with profitability, right? So we need to look at different metrics than are the industry norm metrics. And the one we teach at Ranching for Profit is the gross margin per whatever. In this case, we'll probably talk gross margin per cow, gross margin per standard animal unit. Yeah. So what that is when we calculate gross margin, it's gross product, which is kind of related to gross revenue. Okay. Gross product minus direct costs. Okay. Yeah. So the gross product minus direct costs leaves us our gross margin. So you could look at that as the money left over to service overheads, the money for profit. That's the gross margin. And then we take that gross margin and we divide it by some meaningful metric. And so in this case, number of cows, number of standard animal units. You could do it number of acres, if acres are the limiting factor. You could do it per full-time employee. There's all sorts of ways you could look at it. But but the most convention one is gross margin per cow, which let's talk that moving forward. So gross margin per cow, it essentially gives you the economic efficiency of that production unit, right? So if I was looking at a ranch and I was comparing this ranch's gross margin per cow to this ranch's gross margin per cow, or like your spring calving herd to your fall calving herd, or, all those things, then that number would tell us how good is this enterprise at creating value to service the overheads, right? That's what that number is going to tell us. So when we talk profitability, that's the angle I'm coming at it from is gross margin per account. Did I make sense on that, Jared?
Yes. Yeah. So, and maybe this is something you don't want to get into yet, but a question that I guess I'm thinking when you talk about that is, if so, we're probably largely going to be talking about stockers and cow-calf, because that seems to be a lot of the two options that people look at. And if you're looking at gross margin, that's before overheads. Yet cow-calf enterprises may have more overheads than the stocker enterprise, or different overheads. How do you make sure you're getting an even comparison between enterprises at that point without including the changes in overhead costs? Does that make sense?
It does. I would suggest that there's probably not a lot of overheads that are going to go away for the average ranch if they move from cow-calf to stockers. Now, are there overheads that could go away? Probably. Are there overheads that they're actually going to take away? Sure. I doubt it. Right. Sure. So the biggest overheads for most ranchers we work with are land and labor.
Yeah.
So when you talk land, okay, what leases are you going to give up? What land costs are you going to stop paying? Well, for most people, that probably none, right?
Yeah.
So then you talk labor, and labor is people and things. So, okay, who are you going to fire, right? Which kid are you going to send town to get a job, right? Mm-hmm. Or what machines are you going to sell, right?
Yeah.
And so those are the two questions. And if people say, well, we're going to keep the same number of employees we have, and we're not going to sell any machines, then really overhead costs are probably not going to move very much.
Yeah. And I suppose one clarification that helps answer that in my head that I hear even thought about is, first I was thinking of feeding equipment or haying equipment, where that's a totally separate enterprise and shouldn't be considered in this overhead at all. Right.
Right. Like your baler and things like
Correct.
That. Those are going to be live over in the farming division, the way we do the numbers. So, I think it would be a reasonable argument to say, you know, this feed wagon that we have on hand for our 300 cows, right? If we didn't have the 300 cows, we should sell the feed wagon. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's a reasonable argument. If that's the case for a business, then absolutely we would count that. We'd come in and look at that reduction in overheads to making the change. But what we find is a lot of ranches are very protective of their stuff. Right. And once they get stuff, it's really hard to part with stuff.
We've still got a couple John Deere stackers sitting in the yard that haven't been used in decades that I can attest to that. That's tough to get rid of stuff. It's worth something to somebody. We just haven't found that person yet. So
it is. And I fall victim of that too. I just sold a stock trailer I've had forever. It's been sitting out in the yard. I sold it for $900 and I thought, you know, I haven't moved that thing in years. Yeah. Would I pay $1,000 for it? Heck no. Take it, you know?
Yep. Now you got $900 you didn't have before, and a little more space in your yard. You don't have weeds growing around. So
that's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Some kid was excited. He's going to put a new floor in it. So I'm like,
perfect.
Knock yourself out.
Yes. Awesome. Okay, good. All right. Now I appreciate that. So that's why you use gross margin for the most part. There might be some slight overhead changes, but for the most part, it's a fair representation between the two businesses. And it gives you after your direct cost, which is a per unit cost, it gives you everything's on an even playing field.
Yes. You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So that's where you were talking about profitability, I guess. And what are some of the better, more profitable producers accomplishing in terms of gross margin per animal unit or per cow, I guess?
Okay. Yeah. Let's dive into it. This is good stuff. Okay. So keep that formula in mind. When we calculate gross margin, it's gross product minus direct cost. Okay.
And actually, I was just going to say, maybe before I did have one question that you just reminded me of there before we get into that. You said that gross product is kind of like gross sales. And I don't know if it's important to dive into it, but do you want to kind of talk about what is a little bit different about gross sales than gross product, or is that not worth talking
sure.
about?
And trying yeah. to explain no, I think that is worth, I think that is worth diving into, and hopefully I can do it justice here in the radio format.
Yeah.
So gross product is the value created.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we say what's the gross product of this enterprise, what's the value it created? Okay. Now, if I look at, let's say I look at 100 cows and what their gross product is going to be. So cowboy math would be the back of the napkin. Okay. I've got 100 cows I start the year with. How many calves am I going to wean, and what are they going to be worth? right? And that's what I would assume my gross product is. It doesn't quite work that way. So, you know, so you might say, well, I'm going to wean 95 calves and they're worth, you know, let's just use $1,000 to make the math easy, right?
Yeah.
So it's dollars per cow. It would be my gross product. Okay, that's not your gross product, because with that 100 cows, you're going to have call animals leaving that herd that are also part of the cash sales from that herd. But now we're going to have to replace those call animals with higher value, usually young breeding stock that are coming in there. So if I'm selling a call for, let's say it's $800, and I'm bringing a young bred replacement in there for, say, $2,000. Okay, well, now I've got the difference in value of those two that have to come off of those cash sale values, right?
Yeah.
So a maybe a simpler way of saying it is gross product is the cash sales plus an inventory adjustment. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've got low value calls leaving the herd, high value replacements coming in.
Yeah.
So, you know, cowboy math would tell you in that example I gave you that it's $950. If you actually ran the math for the calls and the replacements, a gross product of a herd like that might be more like $800.
Sure.
And
yeah.
$750 maybe.
Yeah.
So it's generally going to be lower than just the value of the calf sales.
Yeah. And another kind of example, I guess, if I'm understanding correctly, would be like, so a guy who keeps his own heifers may not see that cash income the heifers leave to a different enterprise, but there was value created but not actually brought into the bank account that would go towards the gross product of those cows.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if I'm holding back every heifer calf, my cash sales are low, but my inventory just grew.
Yeah.
Right. So it's cash sales plus with an inventory adjustment.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Sorry. I'm often find myself cutting people off and diving into rabbit trails. So back to where I left you off there, talking about, where profit, where ranchers are, the better ones.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to work on gross margin. So the two opportunities to work on gross margin is to make the gross product higher or to make the direct cost lower.
Yeah.
Okay. So any strategy that you want to work on gross margin is going to focus on one of those things. I either need a higher gross product or I need lower direct costs.
Okay. Yeah.
For most of the people that we work with, they have more leverage on the cost side than they do on the gross product side. Okay. So when you sit down and you look at their business and you say, where are opportunities to address this? Most people, I'd say, have more leverage to trim that direct cost side than they do to increase the gross product side. Now, there are people who have trimmed those direct costs as far as they can, and any more of that is going to move us backwards, right? So then it's on the top. But let's start with the direct cost side, because I would say of most of the businesses, that one is probably the bigger leverage point. So if you're looking at a cow herd where you're going to start listing out those direct costs. So our direct costs are going to be opportunity interest, feed, vet, marketing, trucking, maybe some breeding costs. Those are going to be the main ones.
Yeah.
Okay. So opportunity interest is the money invested in the cow herd. As if you had that money, what else could you do with it? There's really not leverage on that, right? It's the leverage is, do I own cows or do I not own cows? Do I invest money or do I not invest money? Right.
Yeah.
There might be a little leverage and say, do I own devalued cows or high valued cows? Right. You might be able to get some opportunity interest leverage on that. But for the most part, that one doesn't leave us a lot of room. So the next one is feed cost. And that one varies widely. Right.
Sure.
And I don't need to beat this drum too hard, because I mean, it's been beat on so many different times. But, you know, we'll have people that spend $1,000 per cow per year in fed feed costs. You know, we'll have people that spend $50 per cow.
Yeah. that's like the entire value of the calf just in feed.
And more. Yeah. Some of those things are, you know, that person's going to give me a bunch of reasons why it made sense to do that, right? Well, we're in a drought and hay was $300 a ton and we didn't have any other options. And, you know, we were corner. So we, you know, we fed for 8 months at $300 a ton, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to get there in a hurry. So that direct cost one, that there's enormous variation in what we see in terms of fed feed cost
sure.
per cow on, yeah. on that direct cost side. So that's one of the ones to really look at. You know, we've got some guidelines for what we think are reasonable for that fed feed cost per cow, or some, I guess I shouldn't say reasonable, some targets that we encourage people to work for. You know, if you're in a typical winter, if you're feeding 30 days or less, you're going to be in that top 20% of ranchers with your fed feed cost. Okay. I mean, there's, you know, just if you can figure out a way to graze out for most of those years. Now, in some environments, very probably similar to your environment, not practical, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're choosing to run a year-round herd in an environment like that, right, you're probably going to have to work on some other areas, right? Mm-hmm. Now, maybe a couple years out of 10, you can do that, right? You know, yeah. you can have them graze out for that. So, so there are exceptions to every one of these things, right? Mm-hmm. But that fed feed cost is a huge one. And yeah. and oftentimes people find a lot of leverage there when they really start looking. The first reaction always is, well, you can't do that in my area. Right?
Yeah.
And everybody tells us that, right?
Yeah.
You sit and work with a rancher in Mississippi, right? And they'll say, well, you can't do that down here where there's green grass 12 months
year
out of
round.
The year.
Yeah.
yeah. And then, you know, and then we go up to, you know, northern North Dakota, and people will say, well, you don't understand Dallas, you can't do that here. Right.
Yeah.
so it's the same things that always happen. And somebody's figured out a way to get pretty dang close to it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Now I want to step back and caution a little bit and say, I'm not suggesting people starve their cows.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. We have to keep our cattle in good condition. We have to have a base level of productivity, right? You can't come at the end of the year and say, well, I cut my direct cost to this target you're talking about and my breed up 65%, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in that, right?
Yeah.
So how do we have acceptable animal performance with reasonable costs, and how much leverage is there given your resources in your area to work yeah. on that?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And well, that's a good point. Like, that's one of the reasons I think in the class they kind of asked about, like, how do you impact gross margin or something? And somebody says, well, just cut your costs or whatever. Well, what if that decreases your productivity? And, you know, it's decreased your gross margin. Gross margin is a good analysis because it's not just increased cost or increased production or decreased cost. They have a relation. It's the relationship between the two of them. And like you're saying there, if you cut your feed costs and you drop your breed back to 60%, you've significantly reduced your gross product in line, if not significantly more. So it's yeah. got to be this relationship between the two of them and finding a balance. But yeah. I'm curious then, with like ranchers all over, you said, you know, it's so variable. How and why is it so variable? If there's producers everywhere on that $800 range, and then there's producers next door on the $200 or $100 range, why is that such a variable cost, and what's the holdup from people figuring out how to do it cheaper? That might be a tough question, but
yeah.
talk
yeah.
to a lot of people, so
it's an interesting question, and it might take us down a rabbit hole, but I think it's really it's tradition, it's stories, it's things that at one time economically worked, right? That we put them in place, and at that time that was the right thing to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the things I'm thinking about are the stories of every ranch has a story of remember the winter of X.
Yeah. yeah.
Right. And, you know, we lost 40, 50, 70% of our cattle. They died, you know, and that we're not going to put ourselves in that position again. So sure. we're now set up to do this. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you back up 30 years ago, you know, what was the cost of feed? What was the cost of tractors? What was the cost of labor? Right. And, yeah. and what was the value of a calf? So 30 years ago, having a system that did that probably made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right. And,
yeah.
and oftentimes the people who are leading the businesses, who are making the strategic level decisions, are at a point in their life where they can afford not to change. Mm-hmm. Right. And they can afford yeah. to just say, you know what, I'm comfortable here. Let's just do this.
Yeah.
I know it works. Right.
Yeah.
And so they're not bad people. They're not making unreasonable decisions, right? They're doing what for them makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
But then it changes. And going the other way has its pitfalls as well. You know, if you're going to go to a thing where you're grazing out 12 months out of the year, I could think of some ranches in some of the big range country. Well, you're stockpiling a lot of feed and you're very susceptible to fires, to grasshoppers, to things like that. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's not all sunshine and roses to be on the other side of that line as well, because now you've got some risks that you're exposing yourself to. If you've grazed every bit of feed on the ranch by the 1st of October, right? You know, that's you're a very secure place. You know where every bite of feed is going to come from October 1 to the 1st of May or whatever your time is. So,
I'm just curious, because I want this to have some practical things for farmers too. On top, do you see people like stockpile a year's worth of feed and then do their best to reduce grazing, and then do their best to do the year out grazing, but then they're protected in the bad years? How are there ways that producers can try and find this balance of reducing costs but also being protected against those the winter of such and such or the fire of this year or whatever?
Yeah, we do see that. And in some cases, that really makes sense, where you can store feed cheaply and maintain quality, right? Yeah. In high rainfall environments, that's much more difficult to do. But in some other environments, you really can do that. I like that approach. So let's say we set up a ranch where our goal is to graze out 11 and a half months out of the year, right? And we're going to do storm feeding for those storms, right? And take care of those animals for those days when they really need it. But everything else is. That doesn't mean I don't have a hay pile on the ranch that can get me 45, 60 days, 90 days, whatever the target is, right? Yeah. And I've heard it described as, you think of it as like when you walk into a public building, on the wall is, in case of emergency, break glass and pull this lever, right? And I think at every ranch, and depending on how remote you are, how long it takes to get resources there, you need to have that thing on place, right?
Yeah.
In case of emergency, we reach for this.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So was there anything else on feed costs? Feed is definitely the big one, it sounds like. And part of it, I don't know, I guess I'm no expert, but I've talked to folks like Cooper Hibbard, who I think is feeding all winter long, grazing, excuse me, all winter long in Montana. And then I've talked to other folks in Montana who says part of it is the specific topography of their land that might have certain protection from snow and things versus the neighbors that doesn't. There might be some situations that just can't do it, and that's fine. But you might have to analyze your actual context and figure out if that's a possibility or not. But for a lot of people, there are ways to reduce cost, and looking around, finding some neighbors or people who are doing something different might be a good way to start at tackling that cost.
It certainly is. The thing we probably haven't emphasized enough on here is, so when we look at economics of businesses, this feed cost number almost always rises to the top as a real determinator of profit, right? And again, I'm talking averages, so there's exceptions on all sides. And as you start to ferret out that information in there, it's not really the cost of the feed that's the big flip on that. So here, let me describe a situation to help that make sense. If you and I went and visited, if we pulled into the yard of a ranch, and probably one of your neighbors would be a good example of this, that traditionally feeds cows for 6 months a year. Okay. Let's say they're a 300 cow operation and they almost always feed cows for 6 months out of the year. So let's you and I pull into their yard and go for lunch, right? And they're going to take us around the yard. What are we going to see, right? As we pull into that yard and look around, right? There's going to be sheds, there's going to be machines, there's going to be a lot of investment in making that ranch run. Now let's you and I go visit. I'm thinking of one particular ranch. It's a 1,000 cow ranch. It's near Gillette, Wyoming. In the history of this ranch, they have not fed cows for the last 3 decades.
Wow.
Okay. Not hay. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So let's you and I go pull into the yard of this ranch. Okay. So I think there's three guys that do the labor on this thing, and we're going to go for lunch. So we pull into the yard. What do we see when we get out and look around?
Couple ATVs maybe.
you got it. There's horse trailers, there's ATVs, there's, you know,
yeah,
there's not near the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that is the biggest leverage point on why this fed feed number is such a determination of bottom line profit. Okay. It's not just the cost of the feed.
Sure.
It's what is the overhead structure of the business look like in order to do this?
Yeah. Okay. Hey folks, I just wanted to stop here for just a minute and say that if you're like I was when I first started hearing people talking about knowing the economics of your business and knowing them to the detail that Dallas talks about, that you can actually make actionable decisions on your ranch based on those, if that overwhelms you like it did me when I first started hearing this, you know, it might be important or valuable to have somebody on your team that can help you put those numbers together. And the folks that I recommend is John Haskell and his team over at Ranch Right LLC. These folks are phenomenal and able to help you transform your business and give you actionable financials that will allow you to be more profitable and build your business. So if that's something you want to learn more about, one, I'd recommend go back and check out the episode I had with John Haskell on episode 117, where he talks about how to get managerial accounting, how to have actionable data to make decisions based off in your business. And after you've checked that out, check out their website at ranchrightllc.com. But now we'll get back to my conversation with Dallas about how to make your cow-calf business more profitable.
Totally. So
yeah.
Yeah. So if we're a ranch that's made the decision of this is what we're going to look like, right? We're going to have all this stuff. Okay. Yeah. We're going to have, now we need to create value with this stuff, right? Sure. If we've made the decision to do it. So I think that's a nice segue to the gross product discussion. Okay. Because this direct cost discussion gets beat a lot. I've probably been one of the leaders in beating it, but we need to trim this stuff enough, but at some point we also need to move up the line here. Sure. And look at this product thing.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. Well, let's do that then.
Okay. Okay. And so I a lot of credit for my thinking on this goes to Wally Olson, John Haskell, you know, some of these, Jordan Steele, of these folks that have really been influential on me on helping us think about this in deeper ways. So, sure. So the gross product piece, okay, so what are the determinations of that? Well, in a cow-calf business, it's going to be percent calves weaned, right? How many of the cows that we expose to breeding bring a live calf to the weaning pen? That's going to be a big impact on it.
Yeah,
it's less on the weight of that calf, right? The weight of that calf is pretty far down the line, right?
Sure.
If a cow's bringing a live calf that's marketable, right, that's a heck of a lot better than not bringing anything.
Yeah,
right. And absolutely. If that calf is 425 pounds, but you know, right now it's selling at $3.50. Well, great, right? If that calf is 600 pounds, right, and that's cool too. But it's more important that calf bring a calf.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
So there's one piece of it. Is you know that conception rate, live calves weaned, and then getting them live. That's one big piece of it. The other big piece is this thing around cow depreciation, and sometimes people, when we say cow depreciation, it's going to plug up their thinking a little bit. So maybe let's step back from that and just say, what are we selling and what are we buying? Mm-hmm. Okay. What are we choosing to sell? What are we choosing to keep? Maybe if it's not a buy, maybe it's a keep.
Yeah.
So that piece there has a lot of leverage on the gross product that a ranch is doing. And we'll see those numbers move, I would say, up to $300 to $400 per cow improved gross product.
Yeah.
Based on what animals a business is choosing to sell and what animals they're choosing to buy or keep. Hmm. Right. So there's a huge amount of movement there.
And what are the selection criteria that people make the big impact? Are you talking like ages and classes of animal, like, or age kind of like, I know Wally talks a lot about like the 5 year and younger kind of type cow versus the 6 to 8 where they depreciate heavily type of thing, or?
Yeah. So there's one way to do it, right? There's a million ways to do it. And that's probably the most talked about, that's kind of the low hanging fruit piece, if you would, right? Yeah. Is, could I package and sell my middle-aged bred cows and do like a, you know, a market sale, a, you know, a dispersion sale every few years from the ranch and package and sell those high value animals. So there's one way to look at doing it, right? Rather than let that cow from the time she, you know, like right now, what, a 5-year old bred cow might be pushing close to $3,000, right? Yeah. Where here in a few years, those cows are going to leave your herd as open culls or aged out culls. So she's going to move from a $3,000 cow down to a $1,000 cow within a few years. Right. So I think there's a lot of thought to that. That doesn't fit everybody's system. That doesn't fit, you know, what, where their leverage point is, where their opportunities are for a lot of people. So I think it's really thinking about how can I package and sell everything that leaves my ranch to its highest and best potential.
Yeah.
And then how do I replace those animals at a reasonable expense, a reasonable cost into my business? So, yeah. You know, maybe it is raising our own heifers, but doing so in a low cost way where I'm getting those animals that work in my system. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's buying animals that missed in somebody else's system. So maybe, you know, if I'm a May, June calver, maybe I'm buying my neighbor's late breds.
Yeah.
Right. And instead of him taking them to town, mm-hmm. they just walk across the fence into my system. Right.
Yeah. At a discount, you know, usually. Yeah.
At a discount. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, some of the ranches I look up to are, you know, really studying this, this cattle cycle. And I always get a little leery when we start thinking about timing the markets, right? Cause nobody's going to get it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they intentionally build up a cow herd to do a dispersion sale during mm-hmm. times of high cattle prices. And yeah. then, you know, when those cattle prices come back down, they start over. Right. And so they're replacing them during low value times. They're marketing them during high value times. And if you average that out in terms of the dollars received over those years, I mean, they're probably beating the socks off the people that are just yeah. doing the same thing every year.
Yeah. Well, and something that comes to my mind that seems like it might fit this kind of a conversation too, is what Jordan Thomas, I don't know if you listened to my podcast with him. I think it's the second most listened to episode that I have. It's one of my favorites, or the light bulb moment where he talked about the selecting cows as good investments, essentially based on when they're due to calve, and the difference in likelihood of an animal getting rebred if she's due to calve on the 60th or 90th day of a window versus the 1st through the 30th. And so like an earlier calving cow is significantly more likely to be bred the following year, or to be bred the following year if she was, you know, earlier, versus a later calving cow, which has a significantly higher proportionally rate of becoming open and taking that significant depreciation hit. And so that was a really kind of eye-opening thought for me, I guess. I thought too, or the importance of this is, like you were saying there, it doesn't so much matter if it's a 400 or 600 pound calf. If you think about the difference between a cow producing a 400 pound calf or a cow coming up open, and not only is she not producing that $1,000 in calf value, but she's depreciating at $1,000 too. That's a $2,000 swing, not just the loss of a calf. And it's not just the difference of $100 between a $400 and a $600 calf. It's a $2,000 swing in the loss of a calf and the depreciation of that cow. So that is a huge, it's the importance of making sure your cows get bred. Now that could be used as a justification to start supplementing a lot too, which there's a whole nother trail of thought that can get expensive and dangerous, but at least it's I don't know.
I like the way you're talking about it, because there's a whole bunch of different strategies to come at this thing. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't want people to hear, is that there's one recipe. There's a lot of different ways to follow this, but the push is, well, what can I do to get that gross product up without having my direct costs chase up like a steep thing. I mean, the supplementation thing might be a great idea. Maybe it's 30, 45 days of a really targeted protein supplement to get cows bred. Right. And mm-hmm. maybe you can do that for $1 a day. Right. So maybe $45 a cow spent is going to give you another 5% preg rate. Right. That, mm-hmm. that might be a wonderful thing to do. But the thing you're going to be careful of is that we don't, well, I'm going to get one more percent by doing another $45. Right.
Yeah.
And well, then now that's really expensive.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So,
no, absolutely. Yeah. Oh man, I feel like it's probably pretty common. When you started talking about let's get into gross product, I was like, interesting, because my mind immediately went to increasing the value of the calves. And I was like, how is this going to really, I mean, having bigger calves, having carcass traits, I mean, how is that really going to impact this? And it's not the way you went at all, which is awesome. I was surprised. I hadn't considered this impact on gross product that has nothing really to do with the value of the calf itself, which would probably be at least my assumption.
You look at a breeding herd and those pieces that make up the gross product, the calves are a piece of it, but most people have that piece working pretty well. The piece that they're missing is the inventory moves, the animals that are leaving the herd and the animals that are coming into the herd.
Yeah.
Right. And so, so how do I have every animal that leaves this herd that walks off and she's sold for her highest and best value? I mean, another way to think about that is, okay, you know, hey, every ranch is going to have some cows that don't breed during your season. So what are you going to do with those? Right. Yeah. Are they going to leave the ranch as open culls sold at their lowest market value in the fall? Now, maybe that's the best thing for you, right? Or what if I just left my bulls out or turned my bulls out for a different season, and now I'm packaging and selling bred animals that work in somebody else's system, right? Now, obviously, there's going to be hard culls, you know, lumps, bumps, whatever it is that are going to go as hard culls. People that are doing direct marketing with beef, I mean, you know, those animals, those young cull animals, in my opinion, might make that program, because most people like to use ground beef anyway, right? They're you know, they don't need that super high value steer calf to come to them, right?
Yeah.
So it's another way to look at it.
Well, it's interesting with the direct marketing enterprise. Either A, you're getting your product at a significantly low value because you're buying the depreciated cow, the cheap animal, and marketing it at a high value, or you can look at it as you're adding significant value to your cull animal as you know, I mean, depending on how you do your enterprise breakout. Yeah, one of them is getting a significant benefit, and that's or you split the difference, I guess. But that's what we try to do as well with our open heifers. We grass finish, and to that kind of Jordan Thomas thing, I think he had said too, it's like, you may not choose to have a 60-day breeding window, but you want to have a 60-day calving window, and you can still, you know, acquire the value of those late bred ones. You know, take the premium on it. You don't have to, just sell them as opens, but you may not. Yeah. It may not be wise to choose them as the investments that you keep in your own cow herd.
Yeah. I think that's spot on. A couple challenge on this, you know. People that are in the breeding herd business generally like to keep their own replacements, right? It's part of the joy of being in the breeding herd, and we all think our own genetics are the best. That's another piece where I think it's really worth challenging that to say, you know, is this the right thing for my business to do? I think there's some realities in that you better be at least a certain scale to actually have genetic selection. Right. If you've got a 125 cows, I'm going to argue you probably really don't have enough scale to actually have meaningful genetic selection to say these are the best animals that fit my system. Right. It's just the numbers there just aren't working out because there's not enough in there. And then, you know, when you choose to have that and choose to run your own replacements, most people want to do that as a separate herd, right? So now I've, from my grazing system perspective, I've got a whole nother herd to manage. From the complexity of the business, it's created a lot of complications, right? So if somebody can say, I'm going to source the replacement animals that fit my herd, that are, you know, reasonable value animals, right? And maybe even, dare I say, low value animals, that are my replacement animals that are coming in here. Mm-hmm. And it's going to simplify my business, right? I don't need another herd to develop these. From a cash flow perspective, maybe I get a calf out of those the first year instead of having to carry them for a year without producing a calf for me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge deal, running those heifers from a cash flow perspective, because you've got all the costs and the only income you get is from the culls, right? So I think there's a lot of opportunity to increase gross product from a whole ranch perspective, when we can start looking for how can I put replacements in my ranch that meet some of those criteria. Mm-hmm. And the other piece I wanted to talk about is on the bull side. Now this is really dangerous to open this can of worms, right? Because the bull thing is another piece that people have. There's a lot of pride and ego and all those things wrapped up in this, right?
Yeah.
So, but I will challenge you that if a conventional rancher who's buying bull, let's say you're buying a bull for $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, that bull's probably working on average for 3 years when you average in those that you bought and got home, brought home and got struck by lightning the next day, right?
Sure.
And you average those in with the ones that worked for 5 years or 6 years, right? The average bull works for 3 years. If he's breeding 25 cows a year, right? So over those three, you buy him, you sell him, he's servicing 75 cows. You look at all the cost of carrying an animal for a year, all the cost of depreciation of that bull, the money tied up in them. Most people have in excess of $100 to $125 per weaned calf in their bull cost.
Yeah. Okay?
And there are people who have taken the bull end of the cow-calf business and turned it from a cost center into a profit center. Okay, so instead of having $125 of cost, they're actually making $25, $50, $75, $100 per cow on their bulls. But there's another $100 to maybe even $200 per cow of leverage for people that are willing to ranch weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, that's it's true. I at the risk of doing a selfish plug here, I always think that's a conversation I talk a lot about and stuff too, is the value per calf and bull cost when you're doing that. And 25 to, I'm amazed when people tell me they're doing, somebody who's just coming out looking at their cows too, and we're talking about bulls, and they say they run 20 to 25 cows per bull. And I was like, well, what do you do? And I said, last year we turned out three with 210, and these bulls are pretty consistently 5-6 years old. And then you start dividing the cost per calf of those bulls. And the other thing, another kind of a unique creative strategy, I guess we've reduced our bull cost, is we co-own them with a guy who's a fall calver. So we only feed them 6 months. We have half the purchase price. We get full use out of them, 6 years out of them, more calves per year. Like, our cost per calf is significantly lower. Now, we're buying top end bulls because we're seed stock producers. So our cost per bull is higher. But if a producer was doing that as a commercial guy, there are significant ways to reduce bull costs pretty drastically.
That's exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about, is how do we get creative around this? You know, rather than bulls, they're a, you know, bad part of it. We see people this year, right? It was, oh my gosh, my calves are worth so much. I had all this income. I don't want to pay the government. So let's go out and be stupid at the bulls, right?
Yeah.
You know, and ooh, so you're seeing a lot of that stuff.
Right? Yeah, for sure. No, that's the truth. Cool. Okay. Man, awesome. Yeah, this is good stuff. I am enjoying this. So is there anything, what are the other things, I guess, that are some of the big ones we've talked now about direct costs, cutting some of the direct costs, improving the gross product.
Well, so I think having targets on this stuff is really a useful tool. So we kind of started with sitting down with people at the Ranch and Profit School, and they get through their numbers and they look at it and they go, let's stuff it. Let's go. So let's go back to that same situation. So if I'm sitting down with a rancher and we're looking at their numbers and we get their cow herd done and they're not happy with what they're seeing from a gross margin perspective on their cows, they're not meeting the profit target that they want their business to do. So what I like to do is start from the end and work to the beginning. So let's look at the overhead structure of the ranch. Okay, so it's you, maybe there's two generations here. Okay, so we've got two families that we want to make a decent living on the ranch. So, okay, so we put in salaries and the costs of having those two families there. We've got some basic land costs, right? So maybe we're leasing the ranch from aunts and uncles, right, that have a part of it, right? We're going to look at the opportunity value of the ranch. So we'll put those numbers in there. There's a basic level of machines and stuff that this ranch probably has that creates the way that they want to ranch, right? So they probably say, well, here's some basic machines that we want the ranch to support. Okay. So we can kind of build a bare bones overhead structure, right? So here's what the ranch needs to support. So that, just to create some numbers, let's say that's $200,000.
Yeah.
Okay, would be a bare bone overhead structure for this ranch. Okay. So now we can back into this, and I could say to this person, all right, you guys want to run cows. You like running cows. How many cows could this ranch run? Right. What would be, you know, you kind of have an idea of this. So let's say they told me, well, that's it's a 400 cow ranch. Right. Mm-hmm. So if those were their numbers, now I'm going to see if this works out here, because I'm just pulling numbers out of the air.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take that 200,000. Okay. And we're going to divide it by 400 cows. So there's a $500 gross margin per cow target. Okay. So just by doing that, okay, if we want it to service this amount of overheads before we have any profit, just to service the overheads, we need to produce $500 of gross margin per cow.
Yeah.
What are we at now? What are some of our leverage points, right? So if we're looking at their numbers and they're currently at $300 per cow gross margin, we might say, okay, well, what does it take to move us to $500, right? What what kind of changes do we need, right? Do we can we find that in reduced feed cost? Do we need to look at, you know, maybe a change like these bulls that you just mentioned, right? So something like that. What does that get us? And then what do we move from here? So it's really nice to have targets to say, I need a $500 gross margin per cow.
Yeah.
And then we start working to create that.
Yeah.
People always want to ask me, well, what's the right gross margin? And it feels like a cop-out answer. And I tell them the right gross margin, right?
Yeah.
It's what does your business need? What do you want it to do?
Sure.
You know, this same ranch, if it was a first generation ranch, all these costs are cash costs, right? They've got to actually service all this stuff. So maybe their gross margin target's $800 per cow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's ranches that are doing better than $800 gross margin per cow. So it can be done, right? Yeah. But what does it look like? So,
yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. I'm curious. You mentioned there's ranches doing $800 gross margins. I was just looking because I posted on Twitter. I'm pretty excited. I've got kind of a stacked row of interviews here. I've got you, Will Harris, and Alan Williams here lined up over the next few days. I'm pretty pumped about this. And so I asked folks if they had questions, and one of them was talking about benchmarking. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that is and what some of the benchmarks that you've seen cow-calf producers accomplish. And some of the better, what are some goals that people actually can shoot for as realistic?
That's a good question. My answer is probably going to surprise you a little bit.
Okay.
I think benchmarks are overrated. We teach benchmarks at Ranching for Profit. And the way I like to describe them are benchmarks are useful once you've figured out what your profit target is and what your business is. Now we overlay benchmarks. And now we pick up our head and we say, where are our greatest opportunities to make change?
Sure.
Okay. So if let's go back to this ranch I was just picking on. If they're at a $200,000 overheads, they're currently, let's say they're running $250 gross margin per cow, right? This is their labor unit. This is their machines. If that's where they are, they're probably, they're going backwards economically by $100,000 to $150,000 per year, right? So they're going to be really disgusted when they run the numbers and see that. And now we can pick our heads up and say, okay, let's lay my business next to the benchmarks and see what that's telling me, right? So when we do that, what those benchmarks are going to be, you can think of them as like traffic lights, okay? So that gross margin, if it's $250 per cow, is probably going to have a big red light next to it. Like, this is a problem.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Those overhead costs, well, relative to the amount of gross product they're currently producing, those overhead costs are out of line, right? So your overhead costs are going to have a red light of, hey, this is too high, right?
Yeah.
Now, so now we look at those and we say, okay, I've got two areas. I've got my gross margin's not good enough, and my overheads are too high. So we say, where do we have more leverage to work? Well, those overhead costs, even though they're too high, this ranch wants a business that supports two generations. They want a business that meets the land payments on this place, right? Or obligation to family or whatever it might be. So there's probably not much leverage on that, right? Now, or probably not leverage that we want to really, really pull, because the overheads are very difficult to deal with. So what if we went to work on this gross margin? What if we got that gross product quite a bit higher? Right. Well, now our overheads are actually within line with where our new gross product is. So by going to work on this one, we might have actually fixed these other two.
Okay? Sure.
So again, what I see people doing with overheads is they try to with benchmarks, is they try to reverse engineer a business to meet the benchmarks. Okay. Don't do that. Don't let the benchmarks be your business structure outline. Sure. Right.
Okay.
You build your business, you create something that works. If it's not meeting your targets, now we pull our heads up and we look at where those benchmarks are goalposts, right?
Yeah.
We look at where the goalposts are relative to the performance of our business.
Sure.
And then we let them kind of guide our strategy to say, okay, the benchmarks are telling us we're high here, we're high here. Or which of those two do I have leverage to work on? Okay, let's go here, right?
Sure.
And so then we outline it. So I think benchmarks are overrated because people try to reverse engineer the business to meet the benchmarks. Mm-hmm. Look at them as ways to kind of shine a light on where might the problem be, and which mm-hmm. ones are do you have leverage and are willing to work on.
Okay. Okay.
Push it that way.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And this, now this just popped into my head. So it'll be one of those things that I speak as I think, and it might not come out right. But I think when I remember going through the class, and we went through kind of our overhead ratios, and somewhere along the line, either our overheads were significantly higher compared to another operation, and we have a crop farming enterprise. So this is kind of a personal question. I'm curious, how does this look where essentially my thought was in a cow-calf operation, a lot of your equity is tied up in cows, which is allocated as a direct cost before gross margin. Whereas in a crop farming enterprise, a lot of our equity is held in equipment and equipment largely, which is after direct costs as an overhead. Is that a fair representation then? When we had a very skewed off kind of a overhead ratio, I think, when comparing to the benchmarks. And I was wondering if that was largely it, because our model is so different in that a lot of our equity is held in assets that are charged as overhead as opposed to just direct cost. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're right in some ways, in that in a cropping business, a cropping business is generally a higher overhead business than a livestock business, because we need that stuff. But you think about the overhead benchmarks, it's overheads relative to gross product, right? So if that crop farming business is really good at creating value, which a lot of them are, especially in the last few years, right? Those gross products have been exceptionally high,
yeah.
Right? Then relative to your gross product, at how your overhead's doing, right? So it kind of sorts itself out because of the value of the crops that are being produced. Right. So we'll see some crop farming businesses that are actually beating our benchmarks because they're running those over so many acres. The commodity prices have been higher. Right. So that one's a little bit sensitive to those commodity prices, because it'll move.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. I don't know if that's even too relevant to this conversation, but it popped into my head there where we were talking about that. And I remembered thinking back then how ours were so, it seemed like it was so off, but maybe we are in fact just running a bad overhead operation.
Yeah.
And
you might run them again, because I remember you came to the school and we were sitting down. I think it might have been at a very different time in the markets.
Sure.
And so I'd be curious to see what that's moved since.
Yeah. So. No, we got still have a lot to figure out since then, but I appreciate you at least indulging that question. Cool. Okay. So that's a good question about good point about benchmarks, and just use them as kind of guideposts, not necessarily this is where I need to be, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think the benchmarks, you know, the way we present them, you see benchmarks presented in a lot of different industry talk in a lot of different ways. The way we present them is benchmarks are what are the most profitable ranches doing, right?
Yeah.
So it's not averages. We're not looking across the industry and saying, here's the average. Yes. That's the benchmark, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to keep in mind that the average business is losing money.
Yes.
Okay. So being better than bad does not make one good, right?
Yeah.
So,
no. Correct.
So the benchmarks are like, okay, here's some targets to aspire to. One of the ones that we've been presenting that I think is a really interesting one to think about is gross product per FTE, gross product per full-time employee. And our number has been 400,000. We moved it up several years ago. I think it's time to move it up again. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be pushing more like 500,000 gross product per FTE.
Sure.
In a farming business, that even needs to be higher.
Okay.
Right. Because a lot of that gross product is coming from value machines are producing, not value labor is producing.
Yes. Sure.
Right? So
that's part of labor, right? In how you equipment is tied in with labor. Yeah. So since there's more higher costs associated with that labor because of all of the equipment, it needs a higher gross.
Equipment.
product
needs to be higher. Yeah. So, sure. So like what that would tell me is if I've got two full-time employees on a ranching business, we need to be doing about $1 million of gross product coming into that business a year.
Okay.
Right. To hit that. If it's a farming business, maybe it needs to be 1.4, right? 1.2, somewhere in there.
Sure.
And, okay. And what we see is we have a lot of businesses that have, $500,000 of gross product that are trying to support two full-time mm-hmm. labor units on that. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's the business just isn't scaled enough and isn't producing enough value to cover those. I mean, we're covering the cost of them, but there's not value left over after the cost of the employees covered.
Sure.
Right?
Okay. So nice. Yeah. What about what's the, this is, I don't know if this is benchmarks, I forget, but like return on equity or how does that work and how do you look at that where you already have a return to your equity of 10% charged in as a cost before you look at a return? What are typical returns in this business? I mean, it's so commonly said, I mean, you don't get into agriculture, farming, or ranching for the money. I mean, there's a lot of better ways to spend your money, but you have producers generating pretty significant returns. I think I've heard you on other podcasts talk about an oil man maybe who went into the cow-calf business and was extremely profitable. I love that story. It's so cool.
Yeah. That was a cool story to see. He shared that at an EL meeting and he said, my agricultural investments have outperformed my oil and gas investments significantly. Yeah. And we were, we were like, everybody says awesome. Ranching can't be profitable, right? We look at return on assets of the operating company, and it's a bit of a rabbit hole to go down, and I'm not sure I want to do it on the podcast format
because
I think it's a bit more confusion than others.
Yeah.
So let me reframe it a little bit, because I think the more important thing is, what is the profit target that your business must make, mm-hmm. and then what is your profit target that you'd like to aspire to?
Yeah.
Right. And I think with a little bit of thought, we can all come up with those numbers. Okay. Yeah. So like a profit target that we must make would be like, what's our minimum debt service, right? What are my minimum targets for reserves to create this coming year? Right.
Yeah.
So if we all sat down and thought about those things, okay, well, I'm carrying this debt. I need to service $100,000 of principal payments on that this year. I'd really like to, maybe I've got some credit card debt I want to clean up or something. Right. And that target's 20,000. Okay. So I've got $120,000 of profit target that I absolutely must make this coming year. So that'd be my minimum. Now mm-hmm. I'd really like to see this business, create this for me that I could set aside. Right. And so now we could have kind of our aspirational profit targets. So you've got your minimums and your aspirational. So then we say, well, what is your business currently doing? Okay. So we're going to look at that. I really don't care what your return on assets are if you're meeting your targets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're getting towards that aspirational target and you're hitting that, and you're at 2% return on assets and our target says you should be at 10, who cares?
Sure.
If you're happy at 2, ranch at 2.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's much more important to identify those goals. And to me, they're much more real, right? When you say, I want to make $100,000 of economic year, I can work to that. If you tell me I want to make 3% return on asset, what does that look like? Right.
Yeah.
So, that
makes sense. Okay. Cool. Is there anything else that I haven't asked that you want to highlight before I ask you a couple of wrap-up questions?
I think we've covered a lot. Yeah, I appreciate the conversation.
No, you bet. Well, then I want to give you the chance to, first of all, plug what you do. We talked about the school a lot. For anybody who somehow listens to this podcast and has not yet heard what it is, I don't know if there's anybody out there who hasn't yet, but talk about that. Talk about where they can sign up for the profit tips, which is the article that sparked this conversation. I think that's a freebie kind of to anyone who wants to check those out.
Absolutely.
Just give you a minute to plug whatever you like, because you've awesome. Got a lot of value. So
appreciate that. Yeah. Our website's ranchmanagement.com, ranchingforprofit.com. Either of those will work. Pop up will come on your screen when you go there, that you put your email in, and then we'll send you profit tips twice a month. It's an article that somebody on the team writes that's something around business management in agriculture. I'd love it if people want to come to the school. It's a 7-day business management school for people in ag. It's not right for everybody. Maybe you're not ready to make that commitment. Maybe it's just not something that fits for you. What I would encourage people to do is, what is right for you, right? What's the thing you're going to do this year to invest in yourself, to help drive your business to where you want it to go. I think every business person needs to do something annually to invest in themselves for the good of the business. I think that thing needs to take you away from the farm and ranch for a significant number of days. Right. It's not enough to say, well, I'm going to go into town and go to this 4-hour meeting, and that's going to be my professional improvement for the coming year. Mm-hmm. Right. I think we need to look at ourselves as what we are. We're CEOs of our businesses. And if you had hired a CEO to run this business, what would you expect of them in terms of investing in themselves for their professional improvement? So if we can be a part of that, we'd love to be a part of that. Our schools for this year are pretty much full. We've got availability in our schools in April and June. So if people want to come to those things, everybody always looks at the schedule and says, well, when are you going to have a school near me? We're not. Get over it.
Yeah.
you just need to identify what time of year works for you and make it happen. And, and I think you'll have to also have a better experience if you travel to attend a school rather than going to one right in your backyard.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
thanks for the conversation, Jared. It's been fun.
That was awesome. Cool. No, I really appreciate it, Dallas. This was a blast, and yeah, hopefully give some people some hope, because the episode that I'll release here actually on Monday, which will be before people listen to this episode, is with Ryan Bruski, who had a similar experience to Trevor, going to an RFP school, switching over to Stockers. And there's probably, I don't want people to get the idea that they can't operate a cow calf business. So I really appreciate you diving into this with me about how we can make that work.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for the opportunity. And again, I appreciate the work you're doing. It's making a difference.
The Herd Quitter podcast is brought to you by Faro Cattle Company, whose mission is to help ranchers put more fun and profit into their business. You can get more information on Faro Cattle Company at farocattle.com. And if you enjoy what you've heard on this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Herd Quitter Podcast or at herdquitterpodcast.com.